by the town, 10th or 11th chapter 10, the nature of spiritual activity, text number 34. Kala atma gamo lokaha.
Kala atma gamo lokaha.
Swabhavo dhamma eva cha.
Swabhavo dhamma eva cha.
Iti mam bahudha prahu.
Iti mam bahudha prahu.
Guna vyakti kale sati.
Guna vyakti kale sati.
Kala atma gamo lokaha.
Kala atma gamo lokaha. Demigods, human beings, animals, fish, birds, insects, plants, etc. gradually evolve their natures and activities. Each species of life executes a particular process of sense gratification, and this function is called the karma of the species. Lacking knowledge of the personality of Godhead, ordinary persons catch a glimpse of the Lord's potencies in the above-mentioned manifestations. Srila Madhvacharya has cited the following information from the Tantra Bhagavata. The Lord is called Kala, or time, because he is the mover and controller of all material qualities. Because he is complete and perfect, he is called Atma, or the Self. And he is the personification of all knowledge. The word Swabhava indicates that the Lord fully controls his own destiny. And as the maintainer of everyone, he is called Dharma. One on a liberated platform can achieve unlimited bliss by worshipping the personality of Godhead, whereas those who are ignorant of the Lord try to find meaning by concocting other objects of worship. one stubbornly imagines that anything is independent of the Lord, one will remain in the grip of the illusory network of the Lord's potency. Seeing the inevitability of the destruction of material things, one is constantly fearful and perpetually laments in the darkness of ignorance. In such darkness, there is no question of happiness. Therefore, one should never think that anything is independent of the personality of God. As soon as one considers anything to be independent of the Lord, one is immediately gripped by the Lord's illusory network called Maya. One should always remain humble and obedient to the personality of Godhead, even when one is liberated, and thus one will achieve the supreme spiritual happiness. People all sitting in the square meter in front of you. Okay, so aham sabasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matvava jante imam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Krishna says, I am the source of everything, everything emanates from me. The wise will understand this, know me and worship me. And are therefore able to see the connection between Krishna and everything. This is also mentioned in the four seed cycles of the Bhagavatam. The Lord mentions to Lord Brahma how there is nothing in the creation that he is separate from, and nothing is separate from him. So, everything within the creation has a connection with the Lord. And to see anything separate from that connection or without that connection is maya or illusion, that which is not. Maya means that which is not. There is separateness in identity, in the sense that, you know, you're not me and I'm not you. And so therefore, you know, we have our individuality. So the living entity has individuality, and so in that sense, a separateness from the Lord. But it's illusory or imaginary to think that in our individuality there's no connection. Now, Krishna mentions in the 15th chapter of the Mamma Vamsa Jivaloke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana that everybody is actually a fragment or a portion of Krishna. And in one sense, this gives rise to this sort of sense of separateness. The fact that we are individuals, and also as individuals, we have a choice. We have the capacity to make our own choices. And so, in that sense, it looks like we have our independence. We do have independence. But that independence is limited. And it's dependent on the relationship or the connection that we have with Krishna. Without Krishna, then nothing exists. So to think that, okay, we have our independence, we have our separateness, if you like, but to think that we can exist separately or independently from Krishna is ignorance. It's not understanding the full picture, the full arrangement of the creation. And so, you know, Krishna mentions again in the 15th chapter, Mata Smriti Jnana Mapavanam Cha. What is Sarvasya Chaham Hridi Sani Visto? Mata Smriti Jnana Mapavanam Cha. Vidais Cha Savairaham Eva Vidyo Vidanta Krit Veda Vid Eva Chaham. That I am situated within the hearts of all living entities. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Mata Smriti Jnana Mapavanam Cha. Smriti means remembrance. Jnana means knowledge. Apavana means forgetfulness. By all of the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta and the knower of the Vedas. Actually, the purpose of studying the Vedas is to understand all of these different relationships and to understand our dependence. And, you know, another example is Krishna says, Sutri Mani Gana Eva. The creation is likened to a necklace, right? Like a set of Kanti Mala. You only see the beads. If you've got a good set of, if you've got a raggy old, taggy old set of beads on, something else. But if you've got a nice set of beads on, all you see is the beads. But without the thread running through all of the beads, you won't have a necklace. So Krishna says, I'm like that, the thread that keeps the whole creation intact, but is invisible, especially to those who have a materialistic conception of existence. Krishna is the thread which keeps it all together, but he's invisible, just like the thread is invisible in a well-strung set of beads. They're not able to see the connection or the thread which keeps everything together. That's Krishna. And they think, or we think, that we can exist, or anything can exist, everything can exist, without the presence of God, without the presence of the Lord. This is ignorance. And of course, in that state of ignorance, then, with the bodily concept of life, bodily identification, then come all of the miseries of material existence. When one is in the bodily concept of life, then basically one has to accept the cycle of birth and death and all of its limitations that come about as a result. So it's recommended here that one has to get free from that illusory understanding, not being able to see the basis of everything. There are hints, as mentioned here, there are hints. However, the materialistic people get a hint of the presence of God. And they wonder, you know, there's a big question. Does God exist? Where is God? Who is he? What is he? And they recognize his presence in these various features of the creation. So they get a hint, or a limited understanding. First one here is Kalaha, time. Krishna says, you know, I am time, the destroyer of all. So, you know, materialistic men see the working of time and they wonder, ooh, what is this? What is this? Time. It creates things, it maintains things, and then ultimately it destroys everything. And, you know, everybody works according to the time. Huh? What's the time? What time is it? Ooh, time to go to work. Ooh. Or when's it knock off time? Huh? Everybody experiences the time factor. And everybody wonders about it. What is it? Who is it? How is it? Where did it come from? Where does it go? You know, let's do some time travel. Well, wouldn't it be great to go into the future? Or even better, return to the past and fix things up. You know, there are science fiction stories written on these concepts. People wonder about time. And its wonder is in appreciating the creation of the Lord. Because the time factor is actually the representation of Krishna. So everybody is in awe of the time factor because it's actually a manifestation of Krishna's potency, Krishna's power, Krishna's prowess. Because ultimately everybody will be destroyed by the time factor. As it was mentioned previously, witness, Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa yesterday, you know, everybody, regardless of how great or how small, will be ultimately destroyed by the time factor. So this is the manifestation of the Lord that people can appreciate. They're not fully able to understand, but they can appreciate. So they get a hint of the presence of... they get a hint. Another example here is the Atma. The Atma. It's mentioned in the purport here that we can... observe the different characteristics of the different species and how each one of them has their own specific characteristic and identity of self. In fact, actually, we can see it in each individual. I was thinking about this when I was traveling, just what an amazing personality Krishna is that he has a personality which has supreme individuality, and from him come all of the other personalities, that's you and me, and each one of us is individual and different. Each one of us. There's not one of us who's the same. And there's an unlimited number of persons like you and me. And each one of us is completely individual, completely different. Every one of us. There are certain characteristics that we have as persons. Right? Certain characteristics. What is the characteristic? What's the main characteristic of a person? Anybody know?
Nature. Nature of a person.
What's that?
Nature of a person.
Oh, the nature of a person. Yeah, what is the nature though? What is the nature of a person?
The soul. The soul somebody.
Yes, that's the nature is to be. But how does he serve? What does he serve with?
Mentality.
Yeah. Desires. Yep. How does he manifest his mentality and desires? What through? Senses. Yeah, persons have senses. If you haven't got any senses, then what are you? A rock or something. Right? To be an individual, we manifest our individuality through our senses. And especially through the working senses. The knowledge acquiring senses. Karmendriya and the Gyanendriya. Right? And of course that's, you know, Krishna's, what is it? Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti pasyanti panti kalayanti chiram jaganti. So he's able to, Krishna's quite an interesting individual, I mentioned this the other day, he's able to perform the function of each one of his senses with one of the other senses. So his senses are all interchangeable. That makes him quite a unique person. We'd all like to be able to do that. That's the uniqueness of Krishna's character and personality, is that he has this unlimited potency. So his senses are each able to perform the function of the other senses, whereas we're limited by our senses in that they only can perform one function. But persons have senses. Individuals have senses. Otherwise, if they don't have any senses, then how do they manifest themselves? They can't. So by analysing all of the different, it mentions here, the unique process of sense gratification in each species, we're able to appreciate the potency of the personality of Godhead. Because it's a limited manifestation of that potency, but it's a manifestation of that potency indicating the presence of God, the person, the individual. The fact that you're an individual and that I'm an individual. You know, I often tell this story. I was once on a rare occasion that my mother ever inquires about the spiritual topics. She was asking me some questions when I first started meeting my parents. I became a devotee. My mother asking, and I was explaining how God was a person, and my mother was saying, "God's not a person, is he?" And I said, "Well, he has to be a person. If he's the source of everything, right? If he's the source," and this is another feature of God. "If he's the source of everything, then he has to have personality. He can't not have personality. If he's missing something that exists in his creation, then that means that he's not complete. He's got to be the source of everything. And if personality exists in the creation, that means personality must exist in him. Otherwise you can't give something that you haven't got." Mm-hmm. Right? You can't manifest something that you don't have originally in the first place. That was too much for my mother to absorb. She couldn't understand it. What? Yes, ma'am.
Like Lord Brahma said to Hiranyakashipu, "Yeah. I can't give you immortality."
That's right.
"So I'm not the immortal."
That's right. Exactly. He couldn't give something that he didn't have. Yes. Good example. So, the personality that exists in the different living entities and that particular feature that they have is an indication of the personality that exists in the source of everything. And so when people see that personality, they appreciate the potency of God. They're not necessarily able to see God in his full manifestations, but they're able to sometimes get a hint. Of course, being covered over too much by ignorance, and they're not able to appreciate that nature of personality. But they get a hint. Here, it mentions here, lacking knowledge of the personality of Godhead, ordinary persons catch a glimpse of the Lord's potencies in the above mentioned manifestations. All powerful time, the self, another one here, Vedic knowledge. They study the hymns of the Vedas. They study the Vedanta. Because in studying the Vedanta, being misled by different theories, they come to an impersonal conclusion, that the impersonal is higher than the personal. So that's another way. Another way of getting an appreciation of the Lord, but in a limited capacity, by studying the Vedas. So, what else is there? They acknowledge the universe. Just seeing the universe and thinking, how big is the universe? How big is it? That's like the impersonal, that's another impersonal conception, or, you know, the conception of the universal form. Just imagining the size of the creation and that everything fits within it, then that must be God. Right? But again, it's a limited understanding. You know, these understandings possibly, Prabhupada mentions, possibly combined, a person can come to an understanding that God is a person, but it's very rare. It actually doesn't happen. Most often, when people analyze the creation, they look at things from an intellectual perspective, then pretty much the highest understanding that they can come to is that, you know, God's an all-pervading energy that exists within everything, creates everything, maintains everything, destroys everything, but it's an impersonal understanding. It is never to the point of understanding that God is a person who likes to play with his friends in Vrindavan and holds a flute and, you know, sports with his girlfriends. You know, that's just such a phenomenal step beyond this ability to come to the, and even coming to the impersonal conception of existence and presence of God is rare. To come to that realization is rare, left up to one's own devices. So, looking at one's own self, as I mentioned, looking at the self, it mentions here the self, one's own nature, religious ceremonies and so on. So, the general position of people is bewilderment, basically. And even if they get a sense of the presence of God, they can't understand it. They can't understand it. There's that verse in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Vita raga vaya krodha. Right. There are different reasons, or there are different obstacles, obstructions, if you like, for persons to come to the understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Too much attachment to, you know, just sense gratification. Fear of one's personality and fear of the personality of Godhead. Krodha, anger, you know, and Prabhupada mentions that in a purport that people are taught or told about the personality of Godhead, they're told about the features of God, because it's too bewildering for them, they just become angry. Ah, it's too hard, I don't want to understand these things. You know, very often you hear in public debate how people denigrate religion. And they even say, religion is the cause of all of our problems. They will. You know, they'll say, and they'll say, look at Afghanistan, look at Iraq, it's all because of religion. And, you know, then obviously blame the Muslims. Right? Look at bombing yesterday in Jakarta, as an example, right? Now, who are they going to blame?
Religion.
Huh? the Muslim extremists, right? And then they'll say, ah, it's just because of religion. So this is an example of how people can become angry at religious processes and see that it causes division in society. Look at Israel, for example. You know, a world hotspot. And it appears to be it's very simplistic to say it's caused by religion. It's not really, actually. But it's how people misunderstand things. So people, you know, very often in trying to understand these manifestations which inspire awe and reverence and an appreciation of the presence of God are too difficult for ordinary people to understand. Very difficult for ordinary people to understand. They don't have the vocabulary to describe what they're experiencing and what they're seeing and how to comprehend the presence of God within everything. What to speak of the ability to, you know, understand it. Actually, they have the ability to understand it. And this is why the association of the devotees is so important, because everybody pretty much has the capacity, if they have some devotional inclination, or if they have an inquisitive mind and an open heart, then pretty much anybody can understand the nature of the Supreme Person. You know, as it mentions here, if you analyse your own self, then you can understand personality. And if you can appreciate that you've got a personality, then it can't be that hard to understand that if God is the source of everything, then he also has personality. Right? But it needs a devotee to explain it. This is why the association of the devotees is so important. You know, I remember when I was... Before I met the devotees, I was always inquiring about things and trying to work out, what's the purpose of life? Why am I suffering so much? There's got to be a solution. You know, the reason for existence is to sort this mess out. But I couldn't find anybody who could tell me what the solution was until I met the devotees. And then I was mentioned the devotees the other day, and I was talking to Dale last night. You know, I didn't actually read one of Prabhupada's books before I joined the temple. But I knew that I liked prasadam, and I liked to chant Hare Krishna, and I liked to ask questions of the devotees. You know, when I read a Bhagavad Gita, my head would just swim because it was all Bhagavan and Paramatma and Brahman and stuff. And I couldn't, you know, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, it was like... I could sort of get an idea, but if it was explained to me by a devotee, I'd say, oh, yeah, that's right. Very well, for very good. Back to service. Back to work for Krishna. So, you know, it's easy to be bewildered. Even though we sense the presence of God within everything by our own endeavours, we're not able to actually understand it until we come into the association of the devotees. And as Prabhupada said, you know, Guru Krishna Prasad Boy Bhakti Lata Beej. By the mercy of Krishna, we get the association of the devotees. By the association of the devotees, we get Krishna. This is Krishna's system. And in that sense, you know, each one of us then acts as a guru for others who don't have that understanding. You know. And that's why Lord Chaitanya gave the instruction, Yare Deka Tareka Krishna Upadesh. Amara Agrai Hanaguru Tana E Desh. Wherever we meet, wherever we go, we should give people an opportunity to understand Krishna. Whether it's by our association or whether it's by our instruction. Because you can't always instruct people. But this is the only means by which we can get out of this bewilderment, and how others can get out of the bewilderment. So that when they're inspired to inquire, then there's somebody who can give them a proper and clear understanding. Otherwise, by our ordinary association, we just become more bewildered, and so therefore angry, or disgusted. That's too hard. I can't do it yet. Because a lot of people are also fearful of what spiritual life means. This is why preaching, in one sense, or giving Krishna consciousness to others, is a very, very delicate operation. Very delicate. Has to be introduced in a very sensitive way for some people, because they're scared. They're scared of what the presence of God actually means. It means I've got to do something. And it may be doing something that I don't want to do. I don't like. That's advised by Rupa Goswami. If you take shelter of a spiritual master, then you have to be prepared to accept that you may have to do things that you ordinarily wouldn't want to do. So, you know, in helping people getting over this bewilderment, getting over this, you know, they have a sense of the presence of God, but they fear the consequences. And, you know, so they're always asking, you know, are you allowed to watch television? Are you allowed to go to parties? These are the kind of questions that I get from the kids in the schools all the time. Do you have a girlfriend? Right? This is pretty important stuff. They're scared. What does it mean? If God exists and he's the boss, and everybody recognises, you know, he's the boss, then what have I got to do? And a lot of it is it comes from this, you know, raga, attachment to material things, attachment to material pleasures. And then they don't realise that spiritual life means spiritual pleasure. You know, material life means I can engage my personality in activities that give me enjoyment. What they don't realise is that spiritual life means spiritual personality engaging in spiritual enjoyment, in spiritual activities. You know, for them, it's hard for them to appreciate that, you know, we don't have a television. Huh? I mentioned this before, you know, once there was a surveyor coming around Albert Park, and he said to me, he was asking, have you got a television? I said, we don't have a television. What? You don't have a television? What's wrong with you? You don't have a television? He said, actually, I was in a house just down the road, and he said, they got 5 televisions in their place. He's even got a television in the toilet. So, you know, they can't conceive of, is life without television? What they don't understand is that the devotees have their pleasure in devotional activities, and so the television is sort of like, you know, who cares about television? We have plenty of fun without televisions. Huh? We can enjoy without television, believe it or not. But they're scared. Due to that attachment. So, the key to getting out of this bewilderment, or helping others out of this bewilderment, is to either stay in the association of devotees or give association to those who are seeking some relief from this bewildering state of affairs. They're inspired by what they experience to seek an understanding of things. There are people who inspire, and that's, you know, they're the innocent and inquisitive people. Many of them. Who, when they get the association of the devotees, when given liberally and appropriately, gently, you know, personally given, then people can actually get out of this bewilderment. Of course, for us, to stay out of, you know, ignorance, we need the association of the devotees to understand the personality of Godhead, the personality of Krishna. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points?
Yes, one question. You say that Krishna says that he is the source of all everything, right?
Yes.
So it means sometimes we have different kinds of thoughts. Some are good, some are bad.
Yes.
So even the thoughts also coming from some source. So is it, how to reconcile
the thoughts?
Thoughts. Sometimes the bad.
The bad thoughts. Where do they come from?
Yeah. So is it?
They come from the backside of Krishna. Right, here's the front and the back. I read something, I think I mentioned this, what was it? I mentioned it to you the other day, you know, I read something interesting this week. I can't remember where I read it, but anyway, it basically the statement was, you don't have to believe everything that you think. Right? We don't have to believe everything that comes into our head. And of course we know that because we have the ability to discriminate. The power of discrimination. So, where do bad thoughts come from? Well, ultimately everything comes from Krishna. Right? The material energy comes from Krishna, the positive and the negative. Actually it's described, as I said, in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, it describes the different living entities and which part of the body of the universal form they actually come from. The bodily conception of existence, right, is basically the source of our bad thoughts, if you like, right? Because we're thinking, I am the body. The body is made up of senses, right? The senses have what? Pushings, urges. Right? We push. And we think, God, where did that come from? Is that me? Right? Sometimes we're shocked by our own, you know, urges. And of course, Rupa Goswami mentions, Vato Vegam, Manasakoda Vegam, Eva Vegam, Udra Basta Vegam. There's the urges of the urge to speak, right? The mind's demands, the action of anger, which is actually one of the functions of the mind, and the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. So we've got this. We're given a material body. With that comes the subtle and the gross elements of the material body. They combine together to create the senses and so forth. And then as a result of that bodily concept, and because of the senses that we have, and then the pushings, and we get all of this weird stuff going on in our head. Huh? So this is where it comes from. Huh? And we've had all sorts of experience in previous lifetimes. We become attached to all sorts of material enjoyment in previous lifetimes. Who knows what we were doing in our last life? Right? You know, look at the animals. Just as an example, since we're talking about animals here, look at a dog. Right? For example, look at a dog. He's always running at you know, it's just his nose, you know. And you know, if he sees something, you know, that he wants to mark off as his territory, you know, then he passes urine on it. But very active, right? Very active, and he's enjoying, you know, to eat all sorts of not very pleasant things. Especially, you know, I never really got to appreciate Prabhupada's instructions about animals until I went to India. And then I saw the state of dogs. I saw the state of the dogs on the street and I thought, wow, this is what it means to be a dog. It's suffering. Huh? Really, it's suffering. But just imagine, you know, how many lifetimes have we been a dog? Huh? And we got attached to doing all of the doggy kind of things. Right? And then, you know, we get to the human form of life and we've still got the doggy stuff running around inside of our subtle body. Right? It's still there. It's mentioned that, you know, Prabhupada mentions that these subtle impressions, and that's, you know, that's just when we were a dog. Right? We've done all, you know, according to the Vedic understanding of things, we've come up through the different species of life. So we've been running around as a dog, and you name it. Hog, a better hog. No? That means you like, you know, we like just lying around in a sewer. So we've got all of those impressions of all of the things we've done. What is bigger, the things that we may have done as humans? They're in our psyche. And then what happens is, as we grow up and as we mature, then, you know, the desires that we have unfulfilled in our past lifetimes, and as a result of all the interactions that we've had with all of our different experiences in the past life, and all the things that we really enjoyed and had a great time doing, they come out in this lifetime. Comes out. And so then, and that's why, you know, sometimes you think, ooh, where did that come from? That urge, you know, that inspiration, you know, just do it. So it's coming from, basically it's coming from material conditioning. And ultimately that's coming from our desire to be separate from Krishna. Ultimately that's where it's coming from. Soon as we have a desire to be separate from Krishna, then Krishna's created the material universe so that we get an opportunity to exercise our independence separate from Him. We think, hang on, if everything comes from God, then it must be His fault. Right? But actually, He's given us our independence. He's given us that capacity to act in whichever way we like. We get the choice. Right? So in actual fact, even though He facilitates everything, the desire to be separate from Him, and then all of the things that we do in the material world, ultimately that comes from our choice. Right? He facilitates it, but it's coming from us, in one sense, that desire. Now, why does that come about? It comes about as a result of the fact that He is independent and He gives us our independence. Right? So in that sense we can say, yeah, it comes from Krishna because He gives us the opportunity to be an individual. Just as He's an individual, I'm an individual. You know, we want to blame it on Him, but actually it's our choice. It's what we chose, if you like. How does that sound? Is it reasonable? So, you know, the material creation, it's created not because Krishna wants it, but as Prabhupada explains, you know, in every community, when they have a town planning, they make facility for a prison, right? Because there's always going to be somebody who just won't obey the laws. They don't want to have a prison. They don't want to have a police force, right? But, you know, it's interesting in the scheme of things, there's the Brahmanas and then there's the Kshatriyas. And the Kshatriyas' job is basically to rule, to carry the danda. Huh? He's got to carry the danda. It's not a very, sometimes it's an unpleasant task. Right? Especially in a devotional community, you know, somebody has to be the administrator. Somebody has to make decisions. When people do things wrong, then they have to say, you're wrong, now you have to be punished.
Oh, I'm a devotee. I can check to the right road.
But somebody has to do it. Somebody's got to wield the stick. Otherwise, people just go and do whatever they like. So that's part of the universal affairs, is that Krishna creates this arrangement. And that's why the mature world is there for, you know, actually. He lets the material energy take care of these things. Nobody wants it. Well, he doesn't want to put it that way. But because the living entity will misbehave, or shall we say, has that opportunity to be independent, so therefore the mature world has to be created. But Krishna's preference is that everybody stays in the spiritual world. And we decide otherwise. I think I'll go and have some fun in the material world. And here's the odd thing. The odd thing is that we know that the material world is a place of suffering. We must. In the spiritual world, we must know that, because otherwise, you know, this is the amazing thing. We choose to put ourselves into a situation which is not good for us, even we know that it's not good for us. Anybody else have any question or comment?
Yeah.
Yep.
Srila Prabhupada said, nothing happens without reason.
Nothing happens without reason or cause. Yeah, no, there's a cause.
Prabhu, you were talking about those impressions that we have from our past life that do influence us.
Mm-hmm.
How would you suggest we become free of those conditioning?
There's only one answer to that question. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's the only solution that I know of. And even then they keep on coming back. There's a lot of them. Huh?
When there is an agitation created by other living entities, how a devotee...
We can blame them.
No, you need to behave, reciprocate, or...
If another person is agitating you?
Yeah, suppose when you interact with several materialistic people.
Yeah.
If there is an agitation created by other living entities,
yeah,
and there is interaction of the modes of nature, so how a devotee behaves or still control...
Deals with them.
Yeah, deals.
There are a number of factors.
There is another thing, like how we can at that point in time relate. There is a element of Krishna in that activity as well, because that's when you are agitated, we lose the.
When you get agitated.
Yeah, I mean.
You don't get agitated, do you?
We don't get agitated, but we are put in a situation where you are supposed to behave in an
appropriate fashion, yeah. And you don't. Yeah. You know, there is such a thing as Krishna's mercy, and in the heat of the moment to respond appropriately really does depend on Krishna's mercy sometimes. And of course we attract Krishna's mercy by good sadhana and by good association and by cultivating Krishna consciousness, so that at a time of stress or difficulty, our unique potential as a devotee is actually manifest, rather than, you know, the outcomes, you know, the guy that we wish would stay in the cupboard at home. Conditioned. There's a conditioned response, and then there's the Krishna conscious response. And we would prefer that the Krishna conscious response comes out at the appropriate, at any time. Right? So, you know, I just off the top of my head, initial response would be to try to cultivate the qualities that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends, which is Trinada Pisa Nichana Tororo Sahishnana. So be tolerant, more humble, you know. That requires cultivation, actually. In provocative circumstances, one actually has to learn to be tolerant and humble. And you know, look, I'll give an example. At the end of the day, when I'm hungry, it's the wrong thing for me to do is to get in a difficult situation, because my temper just goes. You know, tired and hungry. That's the, you know, and you can see it actually. As an example, rather than use me as an example, better to use the Shastra, look at Maharaj Parikshit. Right? Tired and hungry, wasn't greeted properly by Samika Rishi, wasn't it? Samika, is it? And so he garlands him with a snake. Garlanded him with a snake. And then his son Sringi saw it, and then he cursed Maharaj Parikshit to
yes.
Huh?
Dead snake.
I don't know if you ever smelled a dead snake. It was not very pleasant. So, you know, although it's interesting, Maharaj Parikshit is considered to be a pure devotee, and so that was actually part of Krishna's arrangement. So sometimes, even for the devotees, we may see apparently a devotee gets angry or gets upset. We actually have to take that as Krishna's arrangement. Right? But still, for ourselves, we're introspective. You know, certainly you could. Maharaj Parikshit was not happy that was his response. Right. So, you know, in provocative circumstances, better if we're tolerant and respond with a cool head, you know, be very cool-headed. And generally that comes about as a result of good sadhana, good chanting, absorbing ourselves in Krishna consciousness, basically. Because as we absorb ourselves in the process of devotional service, then these good qualities come out. What's that verse? The one that describes how a devotee has all of the good qualities of a demigod. Of the demigods. I can't remember the Sanskrit. Prabhupada quotes it a lot. Fourth or third canto of the Bhagavad Gita. So, you know, as one makes advancement in Krishna consciousness, then the good qualities manifest. Initially, you know, we may have some setbacks or whatever. Now, how do we see those people? Those people we have to see as being Krishna's agents. You know, if there's a difficult situation that we find ourselves in, the tendency is to always want to blame somebody else. But if ultimately we can see Krishna's hand behind everything, And that Krishna is presenting that difficulty or that problem for our purification, for our rectification. And that ultimately that difficulty or that trying circumstances as a result of our past, you know, activities, past actions that come about as a result of our desires, then we can put it into perspective. Not blame the person, but realize, yeah, that person has been directed by Krishna. And Krishna is directing that circumstance or that situation for my purification. So actually it's beneficial for me. So that's the humble and tolerant, you know, that's the proper perspective to see things. So if it's a difficult situation, then we have to remind ourselves this is Krishna's arrangement and he wants me to improve myself. Okay, my response is not appropriate now, so now therefore I have to do something about it. We have to then say, mind you, at the same time, you know, we shouldn't be, you know, then just suffer some circumstances, you know, foolishly. Also, you know, thinking, oh yes, this is Krishna's arrangement. You know, we have to know also that in working with especially materialistic people, that actually sometimes we've got to get out of that association, as an example. Because they're just demons. They may not like you. Right? So, you know, what do you do if somebody doesn't like you? Tolerate it? Maybe you have to tolerate it with somebody you work with, but you know, usually you do something to get out of that association. So, you know, one has to use one's intelligence in dealing with people in difficult situations. There's always the test on us, but then there's also using our intelligence to get out of a messy or a sticky situation, or avoiding certain types of people. Even it happens with devotees. To be honest, I don't like to say that it happens. Not so much now, but certainly it's happened in the past for me. People pick on you. So what do you do when somebody picks on you? What do you do? get out of their association. We have to use our intelligence also. I think we should finish. Bhagavad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.